Hello and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics and beyond make a lot of noise. It's episode 133 and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask of Mars. And joining me this week are the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man that every week tries to put me off in some way, some shape or some form or another when I'm trying to do my intro. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
You're very accusing, and this week I was trying to be nice. I just sent you a nice video for some warm-up, vocal warm-up exercises.
Listeners, you know that's a lie.
The deep throat warm-up exercises.
Pardon?
What?
No.
Coming handy in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, dear. Before it all goes completely wrong, we are joined by a guest this week. Yes, he's the writer who's worked on such titles as Stiffs. Don't chuckle, lads. I know what you like. The Pride Adventures and the latest hit book based on Steve Jackson's fighting fantasy, The Trolltooth Wars, which was a recommendation a couple of weeks ago, I believe. It's our pleasure to welcome PJ Montgomery to the show. Hello.
Hello there.
Hey, dude. You're right.
Hello.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very good.
Good.
Yeah.
We're
excited.
Right. Yeah.
We're quite excited because con season's about to start, aren't we? And everyone's getting very excited, so we're pleased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think True Believers is the first proper one of the year. Is that? Am I?
Yeah, right? I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone's excited to be there. PJ, you're going to be there as well, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, I'm there on the table with Gavin Mitchell, selling as many copies of Trolltooth Wars as we can.
Amazing.
Prime time to talk about it then, sir.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. Good perfect. Timing. Yes. Yeah. Well, our timing is always impeccable. You know that, Tony. But
I'm always a bit early.
It's true. But you know who's never late to being fashionable? And that's our
Back
friend
to the
Comic
adverts.
House. Yes. Yes. After a successful week of Pete from Comic House being actually with us, we're now back to talking about them. His ears are probably burning as we speak. If you
he's
can't
on
make...
holiday. I saw him on Facebook. Isn't he on holiday somewhere?
He's
nice.
Allowed. He's not allowed to have holidays, surely. He should
time,
be
is he?
He should be locked in the basement working on comic stuff, like the rest of us. But anyway, we're excited about going to conventions, but if you can't make it to a convention in your area, and you desperately need to get your fix of independent comics, then I think Comic House is the place to go. On the website...
It's a convention in your computer.
Oh, why didn't I write that down? You would have thought I'd think of something that cheesy, and I can't believe I missed it. Yes. Yes, if you want a convention on your very screen, go to comichouse.com.
It's the best byline ever.
Oh, that's amazing. Because on the website, you'll find a huge library of comics. You can order printed copies if you want. And if you like to read your books digitally, then sign up to the Comic House app, which I've been getting stuck into, finally.
Yep.
And it's absolutely essential reading. There's loads of stuff. The whole Comic House library is on there. From their own anthology comic that's chock full of amazing talent to the likes of such great titles as Morgan's Organs, which I've just started reading.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Oh, my Lord.
That's a comic designed for us.
I know. Which I think says a lot about us.
Yeah.
You got paper and cuts and ink stains, NPCT, 100% biodegradable, to name but a few. It's available now, and for only £3 a month, you get access to all of the comics you could want, really. And that's on top. That's on top of what you get every week at a convention. You can get even more. So go to comichouse.com to find out more today, and just love them like we do. There you go. And they do nice hats.
Yep.
Yeah. As you mentioned last week.
Yeah.
Do we have to wear the hats at conventions now? Is that written into our contract?
No.
That's okay.
I tell you what, I'm wearing it everywhere, so I think the convention is probably the only place I won't wear it.
There
you go. My review's off of the app. So,
there
you go. Look at you, Dan. Mm. Anyway, Tony, before we get stuck into our topic this week, you went out and about, didn't you?
I'm warming myself up with a few more comic events this year.
Lovely. You got away from your bench in the park. And
Sorry?
You got away from the bench in the park and you ventured
behind
out.
Behind the bushes in the park. Yeah, I got away from that. Yesterday I had a bit of a comics day and I thought I'm going to get out of the house, so I went to Krypton Comics. Has anyone here been to Krypton Comics?
I've heard of it but never been.
Yeah, kryptoncomicsonline.co.uk. It's in Walthamstow and it is probably, as far as I know, the best back issue comic shop.
Really? That's quite a statement.
It's really designed for that. And there's, as well as sort of, because I know Gary who runs it, he's a top bloke, Gary, and he's been on the scene. He used to have a shop in Tottenham, and now it's moved to Walthamstow, near Black Horse Lane it is. And it's one big room just full of back issues. And then there's a warehouse in the back. If he knows you, you can have a wander around and look at the back issues in there as well. And it, literally, I went in with a list of things I needed, and he just sort of wandered out the back, came back with them all. Brilliant. Brilliant.
So you do that, do you? You have lists of things?
Not often, but I can't reveal who, but I'm interviewing someone at an upcoming convention, and there's a few sort of stray issues that I wanted to read before I did the interview. So it was a sort of preparation for that, really, sort of thing.
Nice. I think we definitely need to do a back issue episode at some point in the future.
Yeah, we need to do. I tell you what we need to do. We need to go to the Comic Mart, and then we need to record after that.
Oh, yes. That's a good idea. Good idea.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, so there was that. The same day, I got to see a copy of Fanzine from our previous guest, David Hathaway Price, and I sent you a couple of screenshots, didn't I, of it?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's almost ready to release, I think. He's almost there. He messaged me earlier saying it's going to probably be tomorrow or the next day, but it's like 350 pages. It's absolutely
bloody hell.
Yeah, really good. And we spoke to him in the week, didn't we? And I think you sent him an advert, didn't you?
I did indeed.
So there's an advert for our fine show in there. And then from that, I got invited. Well, I got invited. I got Gareth Hopkins and Rick Jackson said, why don't you go down to the Smash, the London Graphic Novel Network event. London Graphic Novel Network, .com event, which is at the Artisan Library. Yes, the Artisan Library and Community Centre in East London. It's not quite as up its own arse as it sounds.
It's the word artisan, isn't it? Isn't it the word artisan?
Yeah.
It's like when everyone...
Why was it graphic novel as opposed to comic?
I know.
I'm not one of those people that got a massive issue with that, to be fair. But,
yeah.
In this instance, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a bit about the scenes, don't we? And I mention it most weeks. I certainly did with the guest last week. So, you know, there's a few different scenes. But this is even beyond that sort of gosh comic scene. It's very... I don't know how you put it. I think
is it the literati? A little bit.
But I got there and I met Rick didn't end up going in the end, so I missed Rick. But Gareth was there, so I'm more about him in a bit. But I had a good chat with Gareth and we had a laugh. And I met Ahmed Rafat, who has recently published a comic called Gorilla My Dreams. And he's, I don't know if you remember this, but recently on the Facebook group, he said, "Oh, where's a good place to sell it?" And a lot of people responded, so I got to meet him. That was quite nice. And then they had three or four panels during the day. One about comics festivals versus comic conventions, I think was the name of it. One about Manga Europe, and one about creating comics, which is the first one I went to. I'm going to be honest with you. There were some high points, and there were some low points in relation to it. The panel,
right.
It didn't flow particularly smoothly. I found it quite cringing, to start with. I don't know. It's hard to tell why it was. The lady who ran it, I know her face, but I think her dad runs a comic shop. In fact, she does, because she mentioned it. And she did sit there and say, look, I love Marvel and DC, and I love all kinds of comics. And I thought, right, we're off to a good start here. This is why I'm here. I want to hear this, you know.
Yeah.
And then I just think we suffer sometimes on panels with people who just like talking about themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think it's going to go up at some point on some podcast. I think it was recorded. But I did sit there whilst one particular curator talked about themselves a lot. And I counted, they said 38 times in a very short amount of time, I and like. They kept saying like. And it just, I don't know why, it just got on my nerves quite badly.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said about saying I a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that. There was Chrissy Williams, who I've not previously met before, who made it. She brought up a really good point, which one of the few sort of things that I came away from it from that panel was that she uses animals in her stories and in her comics to skip gender, sex, and age traps, is the phrase she used.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's actually quite clever. I like that. That's a clever...
I think if you have kind of like animal protagonists, it's a lot easier to kind of project onto them.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
And you don't have to worry how old they are or what gender they are or what race they are or, you know, anything like that, really.
Yeah.
And I thought that's important. And it's something I don't really think enough about. I mean, I read like Usagi Jimbo and I read those sort of books, you know, and a lot of the guests we've had on do that sort of book, and it never occurs to me. I think it is a way that we get around it sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
it allows you to communicate character and story without having to decide, I suppose.
Yeah. And it also then, sort of, if people kick up a fuss about it for some reason, it makes it more clear that they're clearly projecting their own stereotypes onto these stories rather than other way around.
I know, and it's an interesting. It was she made a couple of interesting points, and that was the one that I came away with. It wasn't a complete loss of the panel, and I think there was a lot of people talking about stuff that was interesting. I just felt a couple of people hogged it, and it just sort of brought the whole thing down a little bit.
Yeah.
We're more about talking about the comics and like grandstanding about. One person just talked about their work in the theatre, and I'm thinking, why am I sitting here?
Yeah. Talking about with the Troll Tooth, PJ, they're non-human, aren't they? In that, is that correct?
Most of the characters, I think our main good guy is human, but other than that, humans really only crop up in small supporting roles here and there. Yeah.
Okay.
Quite good looking humans.
Well, that's Gavin's fault, not mine. You know. I didn't write sexy this person or anything like that in the script.
Yeah. So that was that. I thought that was an interesting thing I might bring up. I came away from that. And then today I went for lunch with Jason Gunn. So we had a bit of lunch with him and talked about his new project, which I can't talk about much on here. But he showed me some art. He's a good guy.
Follow Jay on Twitter because the stuff he shares, like he's got some very kind of eclectic tastes with films and art and concrete stuff, and he shares little gems on there which are worth following for to have a look at.
Yeah, he gave me a Japanese monster movie DVD, which if you watch the mailer, is definitely getting a review. It looks absolutely fucking mental.
Nice.
So it's good. Yeah. There you go.
Awesome.
So there's my weekend of comics. I sort of thought I'd get out of the house, and then I drove all the way to Cambridge, and it snowed like a bastard. So,
Tony leaves the house, and he gets all of that done.
I haven't left the house today.
I've been shut in for the past 2 days.
So. Is that the law after you, is it? Or
yeah,
bit of that.
Oh, anyway, so. We've got a couple of topics that we had to talk about this week.
Yeah.
A couple of things have sprung up this week that I think we need to talk about. We want to talk about. It's not that we need to. We can do what we like. This is our show, and you can't stop us.
Three topics that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
No, it's a clickbait title there for the podcast.
The clickbait cast. That's what we are.
We'll be doing the 50 times the actors actually did it in a movie.
Yeah.
That's a favourite one of mine.
Or 24 reasons why Jurassic Park and Dennis the movie are the same film. I hate those. Anyway, don't get me started. We're going to start off
and
positive.
And please, if anyone has Photoshop available, please swap Dennis's face with Vince's.
You know that's going to happen, you son of a bitch.
It happened last week.
We mentioned Three Men and a Baby, and it happened.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah, that's quality.
So much so that my girlfriend said, "Vince, what are you not telling me?"
I did see that graphic and thought, "What the fuck?" And then it just like clicked in my head. Oh yeah, we talked about.
We forget. We forget what we talk about on this show, don't we? Because we talk so much nonsense.
Yeah.
But we also talk comics. So
yeah,
and we've got plenty of comics to talk about this week. So and. With PJ joining us this week, we thought it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about adaptions and books like that. You know, what it's like to adapt something from another medium. The good, the bad, maybe, just maybe, are ideal adaptions we have yet to see. Maybe.
That's the one.
But to start us off, let's talk about some Troll Tooth, because this is a book that's been out for a little while now. Everyone that has got it has read it and loved it, and it's doing quite well.
I hope not everyone's got it. We've still got some to sell.
Well,
hoping to pick up a copy at True Believers.
Yes, so. One sale.
That's one sale, at least.
But only if you buy ours.
Yeah.
That's going to happen anyway.
Yeah. So, Troll Tooth Wars, then, PJ. How did actually this book come about?
Well, I was a fan of the whole Fighting Fantasy series ever since I was about seven or eight. I think they had a couple in the school library.
Yeah.
The actual game books.
Was that so Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone originally?
Yeah, they started the series with Warlock of Firetop Mountain. But actually, it's a thing that other authors then wrote game books, but the front covers were still credited to... It was quite sneaky. They were still credited to Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone by having it say Steve Jackson and Ian Livingstone present, and then the title of the book.
Oh, okay.
And then the actual author would be credited on the title page inside the book.
Oh, clever.
A lot of people, that's why a lot of people think they wrote all of them. But Jackson did write this novel, Trolltooth Wars, which was set in the same world as a lot of the game books and has a lot of the characters and locations and things from the books in there. I think it was just really to try and expand the world a bit, give people more things to play with when they did do a game book, and also for him a bit of an experiment, see if he could write a straight story. And it does sort of read like a game book quest. When you read the novel, you could easily picture it. You could make one decision and slightly change the story and die straight away, or it's very much a fetch quest type story. But I sort of stayed in with the Fighting Fantasy series in and out, I guess, over the years. And they had a bit of a resurgence a few years ago. And I was actually talking to Andy Ewington online on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because he wrote the Freeway Fighter comic that came out last year.
Yep.
And I can't remember how it came up. I think he was talking about doing Freeway Fighter. And I'd always had this idea that a fighting fantasy comic, one set on the world of Titan, where the fantasy books are all set, would be a really good idea, because it's such... the books were all illustrated by these great fantasy illustrators. They're such a good visual identity for the world that just having a comic set in that world would be a good idea. And I thought, again, Trolltooth Wars was an ideal way to start that, because it features so many characters and places. And I mentioned it to him in passing on Twitter, and he said, "We'll do it." And I thought, well, why don't I? So I got in contact with... I sent an email via the Fighting Fantasy website, and Steve Jackson emailed me back, and I basically bought the rights off him and was away.
Did you expect that email back?
No, not at all. I was trying my luck. I certainly didn't expect the email to come back directly from Steve Jackson. I thought it would just be the guy who runs the website would come back to me with like a generic copy and paste thanks but no thanks deal. So I wasn't 100% prepared for it. You know, I sent it, I think, about 5 o'clock one morning when I was working night shifts at the time, and then went home, went to bed, woke up about 3 in the afternoon and the email from Steve was already there. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, but
cool.
I rallied and replied.
Yeah, you really got to do it now, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, no, I had to give him some money, but then I was allowed to do it, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah, sounds like my life, that.
So, where do you go from there, then? You know, once you've got it, because this isn't just... I'm guessing it's not, here you go, here's two bags of crisps and a fiver, now I've got your stuff, and I can do whatever I want with it. There's... You were working alongside Steve Jackson as well as developing it, weren't you?
Well, he, not initially. He didn't really get involved with feedback or anything until we hit the art stage of the book. I was left to my own devices to write the script. I did offer to send him the script, but he said he was like, "No, that's fine, don't worry." So I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I can't remember if I'd gotten in contact, if I'd been looking for an artist. I think I was writing it at the same time as I was looking for an artist, because, as I say, it was also sort of unexpected that it happened. I didn't have an artist. I didn't have any idea how I was actually going to publish it or anything like that when I did get the rights. So, yeah, I just started writing the script once I knew I had it. I just started writing it, yeah.
Wow. So, like, then how did Gav Mitchell come on board, dare we ask?
Yeah, I obviously Gavin and I had already worked together on Stiffs.
Yeah.
And when I was thinking about artists, I was thinking, well, I know Gavin would be a good fit for this, but I know he's also very busy. A lot of people want him for stuff. He still hasn't finished Stiffs. He still hasn't finished Stiffs either, because he's so in demand. but so I thought about messaging him, but then thought, no, he probably won't want to. He's got too much on. So I just put something on Twitter saying, basically, artist wanted, fantasy story, who's interested? And Gav replied, so saying, yes, me. Right. turned out he'd been looking for a fantasy story to draw, so that was convenient.
Oh, cool.
That's all right.
And he's yeah. knocked it out of the park with the...
Oh, it's a stunning book. He's, yeah. he's I, in my opinion, it's the best thing he's drawn so far.
Yeah.
So did you kickstart it, did you, PJ? Is that how you...
We did, yes. I finished writing it all, so we knew how many pages it would be, how much... Because obviously Gav's got to get paid to draw it. That's, you know, yeah. it's a large yeah. chunk of time.
Yeah.
So we worked out what Gav's page rate would be. I then negotiated a slightly lower one. I did, in fairness, I did say to Gav, look, if you draw it for less up front, we'll split profits from the book 50-50. And he went for that. So
okay, yeah.
So yeah, he once we worked out how much it would cost for Gavin to draw the whole thing, and it's 132, 134 odd
yeah.
pages, I think.
Yeah, it's a solid book, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and then print costs, postage costs, or anything, we sort of realised that's a lot of money. So yeah, we thought we should go to Kickstarter for it. But we waited until I finished writing it and Gav had drawn the first, I think, 12 or so pages, just so we could use those for the Kickstarter to show what the book would look like.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we put it on Kickstarter, and that was a nail-biting month. It was a horrific experience.
Really?
We were so close to the line. It was... There were days when we'd end on less money than we started. And
oh, shit.
First couple of days were really good, and then we had one guy who our highest level was like £460, and that was we were doing numbered editions, get drawn into the book, sketch of your character, and this guy would get everything we were offering plus guaranteed book number one of the numbered editions. Someone pledged for that, and then the next day withdrew their pledge, and it was just
I guess that's the risk with some of the higher pledges like that, like the kind of the campaigns built on those massive pledges, and one of those people pulls out.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I think all our high level pledges went, I think, in the end, and there were five or six of them, but between them that came to about £2,000 of the budget that we were asking for. They did in the end all go. Someone else did back that highest level one that had pulled out. But yeah, we didn't hit our target until it didn't look like we were going to, and then the last 48 hours, it all kicked off again. I think it's that thing where a lot of people bookmark projects to remind me.
Yeah, you hear about that, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
But it was only in the last 2 days that we hit it, so it was a stressful, long month. Just try, because I didn't know how to promote it more either. I was tweeting it out. I was saying to people, could you share this? And,
yeah.
You know, I sent it to a few editors and writers and artists just saying, can you just share this? Some of them would just retweet that. Some of them would actually look at it and go, this looks really cool, you should check this out, which was great. Some of them would ignore you completely. I even had a couple going, oh, this is very impersonal, you're doing it like this. And it's just, well, what else can I do?
Yeah.
And every day trying to think of new ways to just get it out there. Email everyone in work and say, please back this.
was there part of you that thought that the Steve Jackson sort of fans, you know, would latch onto it straight away, you know, the hoping that this would hit an audience? You know, were you quite confident going into the Kickstarter?
I knew we'd get some crossover from that. We were asking for a lot, that size book. I probably wouldn't kickstart a book that size again because of how much you have to ask for. And I knew the only way we had a hope of doing it was the fighting fantasy fans, and it would have to be the hardcore fighting fantasy fans, the ones who found it as a kid and were still into it now growing up as grown-ups. So there was an element of banking on that. We did get coverage on the official fighting fantasy website. They kept on putting it out. Jonathan Green, actually, who wrote a lot of the original fighting fantasy books and now does a lot of fantasy fiction and other game books and things, he was a huge help in pushing it, and he's got fans from... He's done stuff, I think, for Warhammer and Doctor Who, so he pushed it out to the people who followed his stuff. But yeah, I was just hoping that between us, Gav and I had amassed enough fans through our other comics work and then the fighting fantasy fans as well. And yeah, we just about did it. So yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
The finished product is high quality as well, like from cover to cover. So I think once you deliver something like that, then people will follow you to your next project, won't they? That's hopefully the theory.
That's the hype. Yeah. I know there's a couple who won't, because the book, you know, the Kickstarter was delayed. In the end, I think it was a year and a half. It was. We ended up being late. Not entirely our fault, but, you know, a lot of it is. I think we ourselves hadn't worked on a big book this big before and underestimated how much work it was going to be for Gav to draw that many pages.
Yeah.
But, you know, you live and learn.
Yeah. And he doesn't shortcut the artwork, does he?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. And the fact that he was doing pencils, inks, and originally all the colours himself, it was only later on we sort of realised, actually, could I get some help for this? So we asked Jim Bamfield to help out and do the flats, credit him as a colour assist in the book. And then Gav just worked on the colour detail then. But yeah, no, Gav did such a good job on it. It's an absolutely stunning book. And we wanted to make sure it looked like a decent book. People would be happy to hold in their hands and read, yeah.
So how does the licensing going forward affect you? I mean, do you have to sign a different deal? Say, for example, you want to get into Waterstones or something like that. You want to distribute it on different platforms. Do you have to go back to them? Say, for example, you say, I want to put it out on Comixology, or I want to put it out on Sequential or Comic House. Do you have to keep going back to them, or...?
We don't currently, we're not really able to put it on any digital platforms at the moment. The license has a time limit on it.
Right.
And to get it on those digital platforms, we just don't have the time, really, essentially. Mm-hmm. In terms of profits and things, there's a set margin in that. So if we did get the book in shops, it would just really affect how much of the profit Gavin and I get from each copy.
Okay.
Steve Jackson and the Fighting Fantasy brand, they have a set amount they take from each cut of each copy we send, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because, I mean, you're limited with distribution a bit then, are you? Or, I mean, I know you're pimping it at conventions and stuff like that. Is there any, where else are you looking to sell it that you're allowed to, if you see what I mean?
We're in contact with a few different comic shops at the moment.
Right.
We were so busy trying to get it out and then sorting out conventions and everything that we only really, towards the end of last year, started looking at that.
Yep.
But we are in contact with a few different comic shops all over the country, most of whom have said, yeah, we'd like to stock it. They've had a look at it, love the book. So it's just trying to...
That's got bookshop written all over it as well, dude. You know, or maybe to sell it in like one of these sort of model shops, or, you know, one of the sort of... I know Warhammer won't stock it, but something similar, you know, is there a network of shops out there that you could send it to, or...?
Potentially. I mean, one of the things we're planning to do this year is go to one of, like, the gaming conventions with it and see how it does there. And then once we've sort of seen how it does in a gaming setting, then sort of look at expanding that to some of those sort of hobby shops and things,
I think that's a good idea. Like, maybe do almost a tour, as it were. You know how people have, like, appearances at comic shops and stuff? You could do, like, you know, see if there's any gaming stores that do it. Because I think it... I mean, these little events, we've talked about on the show before, that, you know, the little events that happen at comic shops are some of the better ones now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go to these small store signings and you get some proper decent interaction with the creators, you discover a new book. And it always sort of warms my heart to see how many people that walk through the door are open to new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're not closed off to, like, the independent stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you get long queues at signings, certainly at Orbital and Gosh, and, you know, Gosh is always mobbed out whenever it's got a launch party and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, would you do another adaption again? Not necessarily of Fighting Fantasy, but after this experience of going through these processes, is that something you're interested in, or are you just going to stick to your own stuff from now on?
I think I would. I want to do some of my own stuff first. But if once I've got a couple more things of my own under my belt and out there, I wouldn't want to do it in the same way. I think I wouldn't want to approach someone for the rights and say, can I do this? But if someone else came to me and said, we'd like you to adapt this, then I probably wouldn't say no.
Yeah. It's a heavy responsibility, isn't it, PJ? Yeah. You know what I mean? To have on your shoulders for that time, isn't it? You know?
Oh, hugely, hugely. And, you know, we did find that. So some of the people who were complaining loudest about the delays on the Kickstarter were some of the hardcore Fighting Fantasy fans.
Yeah.
And they still don't really like the book. So,
they didn't like the book?
No, we've had a couple of them write scathing reviews of the book. Partly, you know, sour grapes, I think. But I think also because it's not quite what... they had in their minds it would be. I think they expected basically the same sort of artwork as you had in the Fighting Fantasy books, the classic detailed fantasy pen ink sort of look, and the fact that it's a comic book style sort of marries the two. So yeah, there's been but to be honest, most of the feedback we've had has been really, really good, and I think the sort of more casual Fighting Fantasy fan, or the Fighting Fantasy fans who were already into comics and understand sort of the process behind it a bit better, they're the ones who've been really supportive and really are behind it.
Would you, in regards to adaptation, I know we're going to go on to this, but going from books to a comic, I would find that a lot easier sort of to get on board with, as opposed to going from a more visual medium like film or television and adapting that to a comic. Do you know what I mean? Jumping from stuff that the prose to comic, I would find easier than trying to adapt something from a visual medium like television or film into a comic.
I think I'd agree with that. I mean, when I adapted it, I read the book once without making any notes or anything, just to get the story in my head, but then went through and wrote down what was happening chapter by chapter, worked out what I could cut out, did the script from that. But because most of it is prose, there's a few illustrations in there of some of the characters, but again, they're ones that you can adapt. Gav could adapt them to his style, tweak the characters so they look like something from a comic. And some of the characters you don't have pictures of, so it was just Gavin reading the description and designing it based on that, so you don't have that. Because, yeah, with a film or a TV show, people have a clear idea of what that film or TV show looks like and what it should look like.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you then try and make it look different when you're adapting it, it may not go down quite so well.
Prose is such a subjective medium, though, isn't it? Because when you read prose, you immediately in your head think of what people look like. So when you see a comic book, you maybe are more likely to think, oh, that's not what I thought it was going to look like. Whereas if you have a film adaption, you've already got that. Someone's locked it into your brain. This is what the character looks like. So if you have the comic book adaption, if it looks like the film, they're going to be like, oh, that's fine. Do you know what I mean? Because their brain has already been told.
Yeah.
What this looks, does that make sense? Am I making sense?
It does. That makes sense.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Thank God.
Well, I know that as well. Some of the film and TV comics, like I know the Doctor Who comics, I think Titan do. They have to have the likenesses of the characters run by the actors. The actors get to either approve
them or
say, no, I don't like that. When they were doing the Ninth Doctor comics, Chris Eccleston kept on rejecting their designs for the Ninth Doctor, and in the end, it turned out because they were making him look too good. I think when you have film and TV ones, you're going to get the actor's opinion on your drawing of that character as well.
Well, that's interesting.
I kind of not a massive fan to comics that are really slavish to kind of like get the likeness of actors down. It doesn't really appeal to me too much. Sometimes it feels like I'm kind of watching the stills from a film, which I don't really like comics like that. I want it just seems devoid of energy.
Yeah, the only one that ever really worked for me, and which is personally one of my favourite sort of adaptions to comics ever, I don't know why, I think it's just because I was caught in the zeitgeist, was the Michael Keaton Batman, when that came out. Is it Jerry Ordway that did that?
Might be, yeah. I like Jerry.
Yeah, it might be.
And it was highly sort of realistic and based on, you know, obviously shots of the film. But I just used to love the looking at the pages of that. That was a beautiful looking work. Whereas I know what you mean. It does take you out of the comic sometimes when it's almost too realistic, isn't it?
It's a weird scenario, and you think you've been reading Batman or Superman for years, and then they do an adaptation of the movie. The movie's an adaptation of the comic, and then they reverse flip that again, don't they, and do that in another comic form. So I remember Kurt Swan drew, was it Superman 3? I can't remember which one it was now. And I remember being more okay with it because it was Superman to me, but with the same story. So it didn't look like it didn't look like Reeves. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
The weird one is it's a weird dynamic when you think of it like that, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a comic one. To movie to back again. When it's like movie to comic, it almost seems a little bit more acceptable somehow.
So I guess the same way with maybe with the Ultimates. You know, we had Samuel Jackson was Nick Fury, and then in the film, maybe that was the other way around. They'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, that was done because he knew Samuel L. Jackson was a big comic collector, didn't he?
Right.
Okay. Anyway, he thought, I'll sell these original pages. That's allegedly the story.
Really?
Yeah. That's why he was drawn as Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah.
Okay. I've had interviews with artists who've drawn some of these adaptations, and the ones who seem to do it best are the ones who say, and I'm not an artist, so I don't know exactly how you'd go about it, but the ones who say, I draw the character, I don't draw the actor.
And yeah, that's fair enough, yeah.
Where they find the line, how they work that, I don't know, but it sort of makes sense to me when they say it, that that's the best way to do it.
I mean, it's horses for courses, but sometimes the less realistic and more cartoony style suits the adaption, maybe.
Yeah.
Rather than the, you know, the super, oh, it's got to look like Clint Eastwood or something, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you might have a bit of an insight to this, because Mark Lamin did some Star Wars comics, didn't
he? Yes, he did, yeah.
What kind of... kind of thing do you have to go through there on likeness wise? Do you know
I'm not
100%
about that one, but I certainly know he did. What was the video game he did a comic of?
Splinter Cell.
Yeah, I certainly know, and he talked to us about it. I can't remember whether it's when we saw him or when he was on the show. Yeah. And he said that literally every weapon, every image had to go backwards and forwards, and they were saying things like the knife's too short, the knife's too long, you know, this sort of thing.
Fucking hell.
And he said that was quite a difficult one to do.
Okay.
It makes me, you know, when you hear things like that, your initial thought is, oh, that's a job's worth. Do you know what I mean? But if it's your property and you're getting someone to adapt it, you know, let's look at it this way. How would we feel about someone else drawing these characters that we know a certain way about?
And I suppose the reverse of that is that they'll get people writing in going, that knife's too long. Yeah. And they're probably like bored to the high teeth with that, aren't they, as well, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we did have a bit of that with Trolltooth Wars. We had to go through Steve Jackson, and there were characters he asked for changes to in terms of how they looked. Nothing.
Can you be a bit specific about that at all, or is it?
Well, the main character, Chadder Darkmane, who he's illustrated in the novel as sort of a, you know, he looks like he can handle himself, but when Gavin drew him, Steve came back and said, "Oh, can you make him look more like Conan, like the big, beefy warrior type?" And I was like,
"Okay,
really? Okay." And in the end, Gavin didn't go quite that exaggerated; he just slightly muscular, because we also wanted him to look like someone who could sort of go undercover effectively and not stand out too much. But also, you know, we did give him quite big muscular arms in the end and things like that. But it was just sort of some characters here and there where Steve would say, can you go more this way or go more that way with it?
Was he looking at initial designs? He didn't get sign off on completed pages. Is that right?
Initially, we'd sent him some designs, and we thought we'd had the okay on those designs. So Gav started drawing it, and then the pages came in, and that's when he went, oh, actually, no, I don't like how that character looks. So Gav did have to change some pages, but after that, the rest of the characters who hadn't appeared yet, we sent designs and said, look, these are how Gavin's going to draw them. Can we get the okay on them before he reaches these pages? So,
I did a freelance job years ago for a comic for, you know, someone thinks, oh, I've got a product, it'd be a good idea to do a comic. So they got in touch with me, and they said, I want the heroine to look like RoboCop, make him look like RoboCop. So I thought, okay. And then, so I did like 5 pages where the heroine looked quite like RoboCop, and then showed him to the client. And I went, no, I don't like the design. It looks too much like RoboCop.
Oh, God. Did you kill them?
Well, if they'd have been in front of me, yeah, I probably would have done. But, so I had to redraw those pages.
How about leading on from what Vince said about his one of his favourites being the Keaton Batman adaptation? Mm-hmm. What would be your two guys? Is there anything that sticks out? You think, right? They really captured that for me. Is there anything that you can think of?
I've got one.
Yeah.
I was too young for the film at the time, and it's my favourite. It's RoboCop. I can remember my nan bought me the Marvel Comics adaptation of it, and I fucking read it over and over and over. And after I got to see the film and looked back at the comics, like there's no similarity whatsoever. They completely changed like all the violent bits, and like at the end where Clarence Brodicker gets the knife, like the metal jack through his neck.
Yeah.
In the book, he throws a grenade at RoboCop, and RoboCop shoots it in the midair and blows him up.
Right.
It's like. I was like, okay, but it was kind of like RoboCop with like the teeth pulled out, but I remember loving it as a kid.
Okay,
yeah, that's good. So if you think about that, it's totally done its job, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was kind of it's weird thinking of that film with no violence and no swearing in it, and
just watch it on ITV. than that before.
Yeah, Manny, the satire element's taken out of it as well. But for as a kid, I was fucking eating it up.
Yeah. What about you, PJ? Are there any attractions that have stuck out to you?
Yeah, I was just trying to think, actually. And the one that's come up to me is the Udon's take on the Street Fighter video games.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I think they capture the characters very well, and the, as basic as it is, the story of the games, they sort of they follow that fairly faithfully while putting their own little touches in it. So yeah, I'd probably say those. I'm really a fan of those. And of course, they've ended up, their artists have ended up doing art for the actual Street Fighter video games since then as well. So
yeah, they capture the energy and the tone and everything, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, without making it like stills of the cartoon on the, which is a mistake some people do, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've done a really good, that studio's done really well for themselves.
Yeah, oh god,
they've kind of got that niche, and it's like, that's fucking got this shit locked down.
But it's all quality, isn't it? That's what I like about them. They're one of the best studios out there, I think. Tony, did you mention one? Is there one?
I haven't done one yet. No. See, I grew up, when I was very little, we had Look In magazine. Does anyone here remember Look In?
Yeah.
No.
And it was like half sort of, it was whatever was popular on TV, they'd have articles on it, and they'd have little comics about it. So you had like Starsky and Hutch, and fucking, even I think they even had an On the Buses. Do you know what I mean?
Quality.
Yeah. And I remember seeing that as a kid and thinking, oh, fucking hell. You know, and I remember quite liking that. And then, of course, the main one is, for me, was the parodies used to get him mad. I know we talked about it before, but the Mad EastEnders special is a big favourite of mine, obviously.
I do remember reading the Batman one, just because like it was more Batman in a comic, if you know what I mean. Read it.
And you could get it in a newsagent. Unlike some stuff you couldn't, do you know what I mean? It was a bit like that, wasn't it, for a while. I really liked Sienkiewicz when he drew, I think it was Marvel's Super Special Edition or Special Edition or something like that. He did a Dune.
How nice. Which,
he's a little bit restrained in it. You know, you can see he's holding it back, but it's still got all the sort of kicking out of the panel. You know, a boot comes out of the panel and one image of, you know, these could almost be framed and put on a wall type stuff. And I really like that. I re-bought it again. It came out in a couple of different formats. You get it, and I think in a comic book form and in a magazine form. And I bought it in the magazine form at New York last year, and I really love that. It's one of my favourite sort of thing. Sienkiewicz can do no wrong. I mean, we all know that sort of thing. So,
brief mention, like adapting stuff was. We've all been talking about a series on Facebook and shit, but that the Toys That Made Us. I didn't realise that G.I. Joe was basically the toy line, and that Larry Hammer made the comic book, and then that's where essentially so much of it sprung from.
It's
a very good documentary, that.
Great series.
I must watch that. Everyone's been talking about that one. I must have a look at that. And I don't think I think as well, one of the ones that really had an impact on me as a kid is the Iron Legion, which is the Pat Mills, Dave Gibbons Doctor Who story, which was just incredible. I think still the best Doctor Who.
That's brilliant.
Still one of the best Doctor Who stories ever, and there's a lot of Doctor Who comics out there now, you know. Just gorgeous stuff. That's one of mine.
It's weird, like, you don't get, correct me if I'm wrong, but any of the recent Marvel films, there's no adaptations of them, are they?
There are, but they're not very good.
And they have those
prequel-y type things, don't they?
Comics,
But more recent, like the prequel to, I think it was free on Comixology, so I downloaded it. The prequel to Captain America Civil War was just an adaptation of Iron Man 3.
That's weird. I still think, though, that kind of the Disney doesn't see the people that go to see the films and comic readers as the same crowd. I think they see them as two different entities, which pretty much are. Yeah, it's crossover, don't get me wrong.
That's a bit of a problem, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so how about, let me pose this question. You get to adapt something into a comic, anything you like.
Oh, fuck. That's
what
hard.
What do you do? Yeah. Anyone want to go?
I'll go.
You're gone.
Murder, She Wrote. Boom! Boom! Drop the mic.
Mulrain's running around with his t-shirt over his head at the moment, isn't he, Stuart? He loves Murder, She Wrote. So he put on Twitter the other day, says, my wife's complaining that the skybox is full of Murder, She Wrote.
I've done that to a couple of people's houses. I go around, like, and they've got Virgin, and then I set up a series link to some shit TV show.
Yeah.
That's great. I think I'm even more and more to call in life of being a troll.
I think I think people get called trolls for just calling out stuff for being shit.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, we can't love everything. If somebody puts something up and I think that's a load of old cack, mate, suddenly you're a troll, rather than, you know, just expressing an opinion about some deluded load of shite. Yeah.
You have to tell me more about that after the show.
Yeah, we'll do. That yeah, I'll mention that one later. Yeah, I'm going to go for one a little bit from out there. As a kid growing up, I read one of the sort of first series of books I read when I was growing up in Victorian London was The Three Investigators by Alfred Hitchcock. Does anyone remember that?
No.
Vaguely.
Yeah, I think Jupiter Jones and his two mates were like investigators, and they used to investigate crimes. A bit like the Hardy Boys. Similar sort of idea.
Hmm.
And I fucking loved that series as a kid. They were really good. You never see it anymore. But I just think bringing that back, like kids investigating crimes as a comic, I think you could go as in a kid's comic somewhere or other. Yeah, I just kind of like that. I like that idea.
Yeah, I think there's totally a market there, because, you know, you find that those sort of books, children's books, they were massive, weren't they? Like kids going on adventures and solving crimes and this, that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was... I'm sure it wasn't written by Alfred Hitchcock, but he had his name on it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, there you go.
That'd be quite nice, wouldn't it, to see you do something wholesome.
Yeah. Yeah, or Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, by Philip K. Dick, which is one of my favourite books ever.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
Very highbrow.
Anyone else?
What about you, PJ? Come on, what would you do?
Yeah, I think there are two other novels, actually, I'd be curious to tackle. One would be The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon. Or Chabon, however that's pronounced.
That's kind, in a way, it's kind of been done, hasn't it?
They've done The Escapist.
Yeah, so it's in a weird sort of meta way it's been done, but it's not been done properly, I don't think. Is that right?
Yeah, I think because it's so steeped in comics history, I think a straight adaptation of that would be quite interesting to today's comic book fans.
Yeah.
The other one...
Who would draw it, PJ?
Gavin Mitchell. There we go. He draws everything. No, I think you'd want to get a couple of different artists for that, depending on which section of the book you're looking at.
You know, I think would be good for that, because he does mood, would be Mr. Prolix. I think he'd be brilliant for that, yeah. He's got that sort of retro style that would look good, I think, you know.
And then the other one I was thinking, though, would be Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke.
Cool, that's an epic undertaking, isn't it? Jesus.
It would be, but I think if you get the right artist, the scenes of involving magic and the set in like the fairy world and everything, they could be absolutely beautiful.
I guess that's the trick, isn't it? That's what you have to do with adapting. People like, for instance, the Dark Tower series with Marvel. I know we've talked about these before, but, you know, they have straight up adapted some of the Dark Tower books, haven't they? I know they did.
Yes,
like, prequel
ones. I think so.
Yeah. So, and those are hefty tomes. So it's you need to learn where to cut the fat away, where, you know, what to use, what not to use.
Yeah.
Certainly, I mean, how big is the Trolltooth Wars novel?
We cut a fair amount. The novel itself runs to 300 something pages, I think.
Yeah.
But we didn't just cut stuff, though. We added stuff in as well. Because you find, just through changing the medium, the pacing of it changes completely. And stuff that's sort of glossed over in the novel, which is a couple of sentences, you can't really get past that quickly when you're actually looking at it happening.
Okay.
And then I added another scene to the end, because the novel sort of ends on a bit of a deus ex machina. And it's okay, it's fine, but we couldn't make it work visually. It didn't feel like a strong enough ending for a comic book, so I wrote another little scene, the last three pages or so, to just stick on the end, just to keep the focus more on our hero, and to try and just make it make more sense of the ending from the novel as a visual as a visual thing.
So with those changes, though, because you have added something to something that was already existing, how did that affect going through the process of going to the person who owned the license and stuff? Was that an approval thing as well?
Yeah, I said to him when I sent him these pages, look, I've added this on. I explained my reasons for doing it, and he just came back and went, yeah, that's absolutely fine. That works. That's great. We didn't add any extra characters or anything like that in. There was something where if... it's just a standard thing, I think, with when you're writing for something else like that, where if we had created any new characters or anything for that, they would belong to them, to the Fighting Fantasy brand, not to us. But we didn't end up creating any new characters. Gavin did draw some that hadn't been drawn before and that hadn't been visualized before. But yeah, so just, I think just the additions, the subtractions, there was never any issue with any of them. No.
Did you ever meet him and hand him a copy or anything like that?
I met him, but it was it was when we were just discussing the rights.
Met him in
person. Other than that, all my communication's been via email. They had the first ever Fighting Fantasy convention for the 30th anniversary, and I went to that. I was already in touch with him, but it was a chance to actually speak to him in person about it. And I think that's where we pretty much finalised the deal. So,
yeah. So have you managed to get like a picture of him holding it or something? You know, something like that. I'm just thinking of, you know, sort of him putting his stamp on it and saying, "Look, this is good. This is part of the canon." You know.
Yes, but also even better than that, there was a big hardcover coffee table book, You Are the Hero. They did one for the 30th anniversary, and then a new edition, almost a supplement, but about not quite as big, but with a lot of material, came out for the 35th anniversary last year. Okay. And there's a whole 8-9 pages just devoted to the Troll Tooth Wars, and
it includes
quotes from Steve Jackson, and at the end of it, just him saying how much he loves it and that he considered it to be an official part of the whole thing. So
we got brilliant,
awesome.
What's the sort of age of these people who are into this? Is it a thing kids are into as well, or?
They're trying to market it to kids. They've just re-released the books again. Scholastic are putting them out, and I think trying to get them out into schools and things. So kids are getting into it. A lot of them through their parents, who were fans of it in the 80s, reading it with them. But then you do have people my age who just step into it and don't have kids and just read.
I bought Warlock of Firetop Mountain when it first came out. I've still got my first copy here, and they changed it a little bit. It looked I remember buying it again for my son and thinking this has been jazzed up a bit.
They definitely jazzed them up.
The
cover of that book has changed so many times. I think I've got three different copies of it, just because one of them, the pages are falling out, and one of them,
one of my favorites was the cover to Forest of Fear. Do you remember that one?
The lizard man shape changer guy on the front.
Yeah, that was such a great cover, that one.
Okay. Marvel did a few, didn't they? Marvel Comics did a Choose Your Own Adventure book novel series. And I've got Captain America did, is it Rocket's Red Glare or something like that? I can't quite see it from when I was
there.
What year was that? I mean, because I know the Choose Your Own Adventure really hit an apex, certainly when I was...
I reckon that was about 84, maybe, something like that. Yeah.
I think it's about the time.
Yeah. I like a score card you could sort of tear out.
Yeah.
You know.
My school library had a Spider-Man one that was actually written by Peter David. And there was a sequence where he had a fight with the Hulk. So.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a cringy story. I remember being in English class in secondary school and talking about the virtues of books with my English teacher at the time, Mr. Dawson. He was reading Mice and Men, and he was asking what I was reading. Obviously, it was one of the Fighting Fantasy books. I can't remember what it was. And he looked at it sort of like a bit of a sneer. And he said, what's so good about these? And I goes, well, unlike conventional books where you've got the one ending in this, you can play for us different every time.
You were such a precocious child.
Yeah. Well, as opposed to conventional prose, Mr. Dawson.
Obviously, I didn't use that language.
Yeah, suddenly Little Fauntleroy has entered the room.
In this one, you get to fight dragons, and you can choose if you want to go left or right. Yeah. And that one is just about...
you made that noise where you go, duh.
Duh. You big div. And it ran away. Detention butcher. But I always like a couple of websites, webcomics do it, where they do like a show that, like, not choose your own adventure, but like a story, and the audience has a vote on what the character or what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. And the artist creator would make that page accordingly.
I've just actually written an audio play that has branching parts for hired me to do it off the back of Troll Tooth Wars. I basically wrote these six episodes, but there are multiple versions of each episode, and at the end the audience get to vote on which way they're going to go, so that should be coming out later in the year.
Oh my god,
nice one. That sounds great.
How difficult was that to do?
That
was really fucking hard. I was despairing at times on that, just trying to make it effectively, because with you still want a full length episode before the choice, so you're almost just giving it an illusion of choice. It was just trying to find the characters, and I cheated a bit and stuck in an omniscient narrator, because when you're doing audio you have to sometimes.
I'm going to copyright this idea, but there's got to be a space for a saucy version of this, isn't there?
I think there was a, because I used to work in bookshops, there's already been a novel which was like an adult's erotic game book thing.
Yes, get in.
So yeah. It's been done, I'm afraid.
Let me just Google that for
links for the show later. Yeah.
Private browsing enabled.
Oh, I so want to say stuff now. Even I'm holding back on this one. Yeah.
Oh my god. I mean, Choose Your Own Adventures are becoming, there is a sort of resurgence, isn't there? I mean, we've seen it with like comics and toys and everything that has that, I hate to use the word, but that retro kind of feel, because all the creators like us that grew up with these sort of things, it's coming back around and you're rediscovering them. Do you think that these will probably get another sort of a second wave of popularity like they used to?
I think it's starting. I think because we've got the advent of tablets and apps and things like that, there's a few companies who are doing these as apps with full color art and music, but it's still you read a passage, roll some electric dice. So I think, and some of those are doing pretty well. There's a company, Tin Man Games, who have done a load of their own versions and then got the Fighting Fantasy license and have done some official adaptations. And with the books coming back, and Scholastic are pushing hard on the Fighting Fantasy reissues that they're releasing. I'm sort of in it with Trolltooth Wars, so it's hard for me to see it almost objectively, because I'm seeing the books everywhere. But I think it is, I don't know if it'll ever be quite as big as it was in the 80s, but I think it is coming back, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, kids, teenagers and that sort of age are just going around doing heroin and anal now, aren't they? It's not just looking for
either wizards. Or, isn't it? Or maybe both.
Well,
who knows?
Yeah. You fall asleep after both of them, so I don't really matter.
Well, that explains why you sleep so much, Tony.
Don't do drugs.
I love the fact that that's the only one you say. Anti-drug pro-anal. Anyway,
I'm going to stand for Parliament. Oh, it's already, it's UKIP, isn't it? Yeah. Oh no, they're pro-drug. I made that up. Don't be
Oh dear. So what does the future have? I mean, because 2018, I guess Trolltooth, when was it released at the end of
Cardiff? Oh, it was about halfway through last year. It was we finally got it into people's hands.
So I mean, I know the journey of the book was a long one and one with lots of learnings and stuff.
It was also one where everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Like we were getting badges for our Kickstarter, and I shit you not, there was a fire at the badge factory, and our badges were burned up. We're working on that level. So.
You can just see Gavin running away with a box of matches in his pocket. That gives me another 2 weeks.
I'm going to write an update to the backers. So there's been a fire at the badge factory, and the number of them being called bullshit. I was like, no, really?
Tell that to the Kickstarter backers. Yeah. They were fucking rolling their eyes.
Whatever.
That old chestnut.
So when the book came out, obviously you were pleased it was out there, and the people that you're getting good reviews, like from most of the people that have it, all the decent people, I'd imagine. I know a lot of our listeners have picked up copies and have enjoyed it. And you're still going to be pushing it for the whole of this year, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we're already looking. We've booked in a few conventions. We're on waiting lists to hear back from other conventions, looking at other ones we can go to. So the plan is to heavily push it for the rest of this year and try and sell out so that when the license is gone, we don't have any copies just hanging around.
Yeah,
nice.
But while that's happening, I guess you've obviously, like you say, you've worked on audio stuff. What are there any other comic projects in the pipeline?
Yes. I'm writing another comic at the moment, which is my own thing that I'm working on. You know, I'm usually a solo writer, but I sort of came to the realization recently that all the comics out there with my name on, there's Stiffs, which I've co-written with Drew Davis and Joe Glass.
Yeah.
Pride Adventures, which is my own story, but it's Joe's world and characters I'm playing with. And Trolltooth Wars, which again I solo wrote, but I adapted from someone else's story. So I'm working on something that's purely mine. Which it's early days at the moment. I was going to start it as soon as Trolltooth finished, but then I got hired to do the audio thing, and I'm a mercenary bastard, so I went with the one that was going to give me money. But yeah, so I've started working on this comic now, and I don't know if it'll be ready for release this year, but you know, fingers crossed.
Can you say who's drawing it, dude, or are you able to, or you want to keep that a secret for the moment?
I don't know yet.
Right, okay.
I've got an artist on it yet. I'm in early stages on the script. Yeah.
Is it an idea that you've had for quite some time that you're finally getting down on paper?
It is, yes. And it's I've got some ideas about who I'd like to draw it, but I haven't actually approached anyone yet. So,
So Gavin Mitchell, when you eventually do it, we'll know.
Actually, there's one thing I can promise: is that Gavin will not be drawing this book.
Yeah.
I bet he ends up doing a pin-up for it though, or something.
Yeah, I'll bet good money. Yeah.
Oh dear. Good. But yeah, we thoroughly recommend the Trolltooth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
And no
sexy that cameo. Even though it's got a sexy cameo in it.
Yeah, there's a couple of. I think I'm a decapitated head somewhere on the page.
You are, yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
I've got to say, though, Tony's my favourite cameo in it. That's just
Tony and Stan the dog.
Yeah, never mind Tony. Yeah. Stan is the best one.
Stan's the hero of the whole issue. He saves the day.
Also, when you recommended it a couple of episodes back, Vince, I noticed you mentioned a character looks like John Locke. Yeah, he fucking does. I actually saw Gavin yesterday and I asked him if that was intentional, and Gav had no idea either, and so that's an accidental one.
Amazing. And while we're on the, I'm just going to chuck in a shout out. Yeah, congratulations to John and Lucy Locke, who got married yesterday.
Congratulations
to them. Many happy returns, or whatever you say when people get married. Or what do you do? Do you smash a bottle of champagne on them and wish them well?
I don't think you smash the bottle on them.
Oh no, that's both.
Only if you're from Croydon.
Yeah, so I was just about to say that's a South London wedding.
Yeah. It's usually a reception held in the Yates Wine Lodge.
And now on the dance floor for a bit of fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But congratulations guys from all of us here. And
Definitely. Yeah.
Yes, and likewise, if you're True Believers, which I know a lot of you people are going to be, and you haven't got the Trolltooth yet, drop by, check it out, because it's well worth it. So there you go.
I agree.
Well, you're going to agree, aren't you? Yeah.
What table are you at, EJ? Do you know?
I will know in a moment. I didn't prepare this.
Yeah. Right, so while he's vamping... there's something else. There's a couple of other subjects we're going to talk about tonight. Dan, there was one that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, this kind of got a fair bit of action on Twitter. The comment that Eric Larson made, I've got the tweet here. It says, professionals will tell you don't work for free, but free is the one advantage a newcomer has, and free will get you places you couldn't go otherwise. He did get quite a lot of stick over this, actually.
Right.
I agree with him.
Yeah. I'm from someone who pretty much does nearly everything for free. Yes. I have to agree. I do it because I love it as well. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah.
My example was, say someone said to me, you can send in images to Savage Dragon like you can do, and if Eric likes them, he's got the page space, he'll put the pin up in there, and that's free. And then I'm getting the exposure of people saying, oh, look, it's Savage Dragon drawn by Dan Butcher, and they might Google me or whatever.
Yeah.
I think under that kind of proviso, it's fine. But if someone said to you, right, I've got a comic book I want done, do you think you'd be able to draw it for free?
Do you think when he said this, and obviously he got negative reactions about it, do you think it was people reading too much into it rather than just... I mean, the way you put it there is the way I think about it. For instance, I'm a fan. If I did it, I'd just say... I did a Walking Dead pin-up, and I sent it to them, and they were like, oh, well, we're going to print it in the next issue. And I'll be like, yeah, brilliant, do whatever you want.
Yeah, I'd actually be like over the moon. I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't just be over the moon if I was you. I'd be over the moon for you, dude, because that's a great opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
I think people were kind of maybe get caught up in this zero contract hours kind of thing, and he's talking about you should be expected to draw whole comic books for free and stuff like that, which obviously isn't on. That's a phenomenal amount of work. But
unless, of course, you want to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There might be someone who's retired or is independently wealthy or just loves comic books and they have the time who wants to draw a comic for free. Then they should be allowed to. Well, I think that there's a world of, I think 140 characters or whatever fucking Twitter is now doesn't encapsulate the whole of the different versions of the world that exist out there, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right.
It is down to the individual. And like you say, if the individual is personally happy with it, then, I mean, why should they have people judge them on what they're doing? You know, certainly if they're working hard and they're not enjoying it and it's horrible and they're being completely mugged off.
Yeah.
Then you say, but that's a completely different situation. That's someone doing it. That's someone doing a bit of work. It's not doing it for the love.
Yeah. Also, like collaboration. If an artist, you write an artist and you understand that there's no money in this, it's a fun project. You choose what collaboration and what project you want to get involved with, and that's totally up to you.
I have been asked to do sort of pinups for Kickstarter campaigns and stuff, and I've been very honoured to be that. You know, I didn't think, you know, ask me 10 years ago and I never would have thought that anyone would be asking me to do something like that. And you know, these creators, I mean, I'm not going to name them, but they insist on paying me. Do you know what I mean? They're like, don't be stupid. I'm going to give you money for it. It's factored into the Kickstarter, blah, blah, blah. And that's wonderful. But I would have done, because they asked me to do the pinup and it was a book that I love and I wanted to submit to. I would have done it for nothing. Because also,
and they know that now.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that everyone can just take the piss out of me.
Yeah.
Because like PJ, I've become a mercenary. So
Eric Glossman went on to go on, like, say, right, you want a job at Image, you would draw the 5 sample pages or something like that, and you're trying to kind of get a gig in there by drawing these sample pages. I've done similar kind of stuff for companies, and there's no expectation for
sample pages. I see amazing sample pages online and just think, Jesus, I'd love to work with that person.
If you see the Miller Watch ones where he does his fucking talent thing, the pages that go up in the forum are like fucking hell, they're amazing. But I think, like, it's a very nuanced kind of statement. It can be taken many ways, but like
someone most of these things do, someone puts on Twitter, I want a cover done for my comic. I've got no problem with people saying, yeah, I'll do it for you, that'll cost you £60 or that'll cost you £2,000, whatever it's going to be. That's because it's a business, isn't it? You know, I have a little bit of a problem where people say, oh, anyone, any chance of someone doing a cover for this charity project and people quoting them a lot of money. I know, which has happened recently, we've heard about that. I've got a little bit of a problem with that. I think sometimes it depends on what the project is. It's like horses for courses, isn't it? It really is, you know?
If you're upfront about it as well and say, look, can anyone do this for me? I don't have any money. Fine. It's up to you to sort of say yay or nay. But I think if you approach someone and say, can you do this for me? I haven't got any money. It should be at least a friend or an associate. You've got some kind of relationship going on, as opposed to this cold calling someone.
Nothing is completely black and white. And these people who say, some people might say, look, I can't pay you any money, but I will be selling this comic at a lot of conventions. It'll be online and I'll be tweeting madly about it. So would you mind doing the cover? And it's seemingly this word has been blacklisted. If someone says for exposure, and then everyone seems to explode like fireworks and say, what an outrageous thing. But if the geezer's being upfront and saying, look, I can't afford to pay for it, but this is, you know, this is what it will be, and you want to do it, then do it. See what I mean?
I said, you've got to work out the transactional benefit involved.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you don't feel like there's a benefit for you, don't do it. It's that simple.
But if Marvel said, oh, can you do this, you know, goes to a professional, can you do this cover for exposure, then sometimes that can, or a big company or someone with money or, you know, whatever. Yeah, that can be a piss take, but it's not every time.
No. You
know? Yeah.
I said,
when Joe Glass asked me to write the Pride Adventures story for him, I just did that he's a mate. I did it as a favour for him. It was an 8-page story. I wrote it, and then it ended up that I wrote a story that had a character in it designed by Chris Anker and was drawn by Christian Wildgoose. So I was over the moon.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
I've never had any money for that, but I'm really proud of it, and I think it's great that I've got that work with those people.
Yeah. I mean, we all write stuff for, you know, charity magazines and convention anthologies and stuff like that. And I think maybe the writing and the art is two different things. Often,
yeah.
Maybe,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I write the stories usually on the train. You know, so it's not. Right. I'm not chained to a desk to do it. You know,
one of the things that frustrated me was the way people were referring to Eric Larson, saying like, "You work in the industry, you should be a voice for change." And it's like, he's one guy that publishes the Savage Dragon.
Yeah, no, kind of
how much pull does Eric Larson have? I'm not taking anything away from the guy.
Yeah, but Eric Larson, if you've read a recent issue of Savage Dragon, is fully aware of how many people read the Savage Dragon.
Yeah,
and as such, he's doing whatever the hell he wants, and he's saying whatever he wants because he's making comics because he loves it, and he can afford to do this. You know,
he's got one of our favourite quotes for a while, isn't he? He says, "If you don't like it, don't buy it."
Yeah, that's simple.
Yeah, well, people are going nuts about issue 228, and it's just a sexual issue. You know, they don't seem to be going nuts about anything else.
Yeah.
And I like following him. He can be fiery, and he can. Yeah. You know, I don't always agree with everything he says, but he is certainly a voice of experience.
Yeah.
You know.
He also drew one of the best Spider-Man, if you ask me.
Yes. I like his Spider-Man. I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Oh God, those for me were his kind of high point of his art. Absolutely amazing. He's dialed back and gone a bit more kind of like looser and not as tight. But some of the Spider-Man stuff he's done was amazing,
phenomenal.
I don't think Savage Dragon's been better than it is now. I got inspired. I think Vince Bond was talking about 11 o'clock comics, and I thought, right, I'm going to have a read of this because I know he has it in his pull list. Mm-hmm. And I stuck it in my pull list when I dropped another title, and it was it's been brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, if there was ever a sort of a spiritual successor to Kirby, it's got to be Larson. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like his stuff. And it's a lot of heart to it. And you think about this is a character that he drew as a kid in his school books and stuff like that. And now he's still doing it 230-odd issues later. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah. Really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just easy. He's an easy target, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. He's a big lump, though. I wouldn't want to have a row with him. Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah, huge guy. He's a Savage Dragon without the fin on his head.
Bloody hell.
And a few of them.
He's green?
Yeah.
I
didn't like he had that bit of a spat with Peter David when he was drawing Amazing Spider-Man, and there's an issue where the Hulk just gets absolutely fucked up by Dr. Octopus to sort of show how tough Dr. Octopus now was with his new adamantium arms. And it was also a bit of a thumb in his nose at Peter David. Look, I've got your character and I'm fucking him up.
But actually, funny enough, that Spider-Man run, halfway through it, his whole house burned down and he still drew the fucking book.
Yeah,
that's right. Alleged. I remember him saying that in an interview, yeah.
He'd lost a lot of stuff, didn't he, artwork?
Yeah.
And...
yeah. He's got a great original art collection as well, I think, from hearing a couple of interviews with him. He's got some cracking stuff. Hasn't he got a whole... He's got a whole Commandy issue, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
The sound to his house was packed to the gills with fucking paper. So
yeah, oh God, don't say that.
Yeah.
So Eric, if you're listening, you're welcome on the show anytime.
Yeah,
he won't come on because of me. I've got fucking Vanguard.
Oh, Vanguard, yeah.
He's at
war.
He's kind of like not had a pop of me on social media, but said like, "Yo, that's my fucking comic." So I was like, "Okay."
Did he really?
Yeah.
Really, I didn't know that, dude. Okay, yeah,
he did.
He's dead to me now.
Ah, well, screw you, Eric Larson.
he wasn't like that, but he was kind of like, well, I've got the character Vanguard. It's like, oh, it's a completely different beast. Like, yeah. And he can't copyright a word for like that reason, so.
Oh, really?
No sweat. I don't think Larson will be coming after me anytime soon.
Yeah, we're right.
Yeah.
We'll protect you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'll throw Tony in front of you.
That's the reason. This is the reason we're going to have to huddle together in the same room at True Believers in case Larson attacks us.
It's Larson. Sure, this is necessary. Yep, it's necessary.
Yeah.
What? Where's your hand? Don't worry, just protecting you.
Just calling the manoeuvre the Larson defence.
I think you're cupping me. Yeah, but what if he attacks your balls?
Good point.
What's anyway. That? It's my chin. Don't ask any more questions.
Larson might hear you.
He could be in the cupboard. I'm afraid.
Oh dear.
Right.
But I'm sure like in the comment section on the group. We'll probably have a few.
Yeah, we'd like to hear what people think about this. Definitely, yeah. I think yes, might be a rager.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because we fully understand, know your worth, people. As a writer, yeah, as an artist, or whatever, your artwork and your creations are whatever you deem they are worth. And some people do completely undervalue themselves. Mm. Totally. Yeah. I know, certainly, if you're creative in some ways, you never believe in your own work anyway.
Yeah.
But it is, seriously, at the end of the day, no matter what anyone says, it's up to you.
And if it's a nuanced issue, and we're not saying working for free is totally acceptable under no circumstances.
Really, if you can
at all
work for money. Yeah, that's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So try to, just, you got to judge it right, haven't you?
Yeah. 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 But there you go.
Yeah.
So
that's how I put to bed. Believers now, if that's table K2. There we go.
There you go. K2. Is that a mountain? That is, isn't it? K2 is a mountain.
Isn't that the Green Hornet's assistant? what was the other subject you had, Daniel?
Oh, it's a kind of, in production of Vanguard, making it, I draw a lot of the, there's like Red Guards, and they're essentially like the Stormtrooper type characters. Mm. And I've got like made up a couple of cheat sheets where I've drawn them in the past, like running or shooting, whatever. I've made a big like sheet of them in Photoshop so I can kind of drop them into the background of panels and like color them up, whatever kind of background decoration. I mean, I know some people are kind of quite, they could be a little down on this and a bit snobbish. I know there's, a couple of web comics where essentially the characters are pre-drawn and they just drop the eyes and the mouth on, which is a bit lazy, but I don't see too much wrong with it up to a point. And
if you're using the same things over and over again so it becomes noticeable in the narrative, then you're doing something wrong. But I see absolutely nothing wrong with having, you know, enough ammunition in your sort of palette that is just going to make life easier for yourself. And also, at the end of the day, you've drawn that whole bloody cheat sheet, so you haven't really cheated because you've still had to draw it all.
Yeah, dropping in assets that I've already made.
Yeah.
But someone, Pete Davis, dropped in a quote from Wally Wood that said, never draw anything you can copy, never copy anything you can trace, never trace anything you can't cut out and paste up.
Was
it him that said Wally Wood used to keep clippings for like background stuff for comics? Is it him?
Really?
Someone said that.
I read some Wally Wood just yesterday. I do love his stuff. Yeah.
I've been up against it on like drawing pages and stuff, and like needed a hand, and I can't fucking draw it. So I've taken a photo of my hand and then like used that in Photoshop and drawn around it and just made it fit into the drawing. It's like, well, it's my fucking hand. I've taken the photo and it's my comic, so I'm putting it in there.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can do whatever you want with your hand, Dan.
Pause, yeah.
I often do.
So, there you go.
Yeah, that was an alluding to masturbation there. So.
It's that time of the night, folks.
Yeah. 9 o'clock.
I was just about to email John Suntrist to see when he wanted to come on. I'll leave it another week again.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Anyway, do we have any shout-outs this week? I've already wasted mine. Well, not wasted, but I've already said mine on the lovely The Lock couple. Congratulations again. There you go.
Yeah.
I've got one.
Mate.
You want to do yours?
You go first.
It's for a Kickstarter.
Oh.
Transylvanian Nights, issue 1.
Oh, yeah, it's just gone live, isn't it?
Yeah. I'll give you the spiel. 10 years after the Vampire War, Transylvania is yet again under threat from Count Dracula. But as General Van Helsing hunts down the Count, two weary circus performers stumble onto a secret that could change everything. Coming from a love of old monster movies, James McCulloch and Johnny Cannon come together to take the classic characters Count Dracula, Van Helsing, Frankenstein's monster, and the Wolfman on a new adventure. 40 pages of adventure are in an A5 format published by Comic House. So second Comic House shout-out of the night.
Nice.
On this one, first pledge is a pound digital version of the comic as a PDF, and you get your name in the thank you section.
Is it a single issue? Is it like issue one sort of thing?
It doesn't reference issue one. Yes.
Yeah. I think in my personal opinion, if you go to issue one of things, then you really should have your digital offering at £1 immediately. I think it's slightly different if you're doing bigger collections, offer them for a couple more pounds, but I think if it's issue one of something, because I don't normally pledge to issue ones of Kickstarters, I'm sorry to say. I know there's a lot of great ones out there, but you know, I prefer like collections and stuff. But certainly, I think £1, it has to be, doesn't it? You know, because I'll pledge on FOMO, that. I'm more likely to pledge on it if it's a quid, and I'll be like, well, I'll check that. Yeah.
I suffer a little bit from FOMO, so I usually go for the issue ones, but
I've totally over that thing when it's like pledge a quid and it's our eternal thanks.
Yeah, fuck that.
It's like, fuck off. That really, really winds me up.
Yeah.
I just... pledge this.
I mean, we did that on Troll Tooth Wars, but
oh, you bastard! You bastard.
Hey, yeah. People took us up on it too, so you know.
Yeah.
But we took after that. Ryan K. Lindsay said, like the £1 one, the first pledge is the first level is the most important one because that's the first one they come to. I really believe that's the digital £1 one and done.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. You live and you learn.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got one. So speaking of digital releases, the we're having obviously everyone, if they haven't heard about our anthology that's coming out in 2 weeks' time, you may have been dead for a while. We've got our comic coming out as of Monday of next week. 5 members of the Awesome Comics Facebook chat talk room will be getting a digital copy sent through to them. We have made, I think, between the three of us, we decided that because we're part of this community and we're very pleased to be part of it, and there's a lot of people in it who are very active on the Facebook page chatting, and in a very sensible and level-headed way, we decided rather than send it out immediately to reviewers, we wanted to send it out to people who are our friends, community members and listeners to the podcast. So for Monday next week, we'll be picking 5 names from people who are busy interacting on the page, and we'll be sending them a copy of the first issue, and that will be 6 days, I'm right in saying, 6 days before it gets its actual formal release.
Yeah.
So we're quite excited by that, and it's something to give back a bit to people who've been ever so nice and listened to us and interacted and supported posts that we've made and you know, read articles that we've written and started and read comics and bought comics that we've made. We thought we'd do that, and that sounded like the right thing to do. We had a big discussion about it weeks ago. Is that right, guys, do you think?
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea.
So we won't be announcing who the names are, but you check your inboxes or your Facebook, whatever you call it, mail inboxes, and you might be getting a Dropbox link to the new issue before everyone else. And we'd love, if you do like it, well, we'd love to hear what you think. Not if you hate it, obviously. we'd love to hear what you think. And hopefully as well, that will get a bit of a bit of something going, and we can meet you and talk to you about it when at that True Believers if you're there, or online if you're not. So that's the way it's going to work. There you go.
Should we get that link the day after we do? Can we talk about that show?
Which one's that?
What, next week's show?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We could. Yeah. If you want. I don't. What do you think?
Yeah. Next week's show. We might as well let them know now. It's in a slight change to the format. We've got someone coming on board. Iz McAuliffe is coming.
Good old Iz.
And she's going to be
not old.
She's going to be putting us under the spotlight to talk about the Awesome Comics anthology. Yes, we're going to have a show that is talking about this crazy idea of a comic that we decided to put out. You know, because obviously we've talked about it in the sense of like, oh, this is great. Oh, I'm doing this. Oh, if you like this. But instead of us asking each other questions, because we already know everything about each other's stories, to get someone to ask us probably questions that we didn't, you know, realise we were going to get.
Yeah, we've not primed her with any questions at all. It's totally off her own back. She's going to ask us what I did. She said, what sort of questions? I said, just your normal sort of insightful questions.
So maybe a good bit of process questions.
Yeah. Finding out how the stories came to be, what the influence is, etc., what's to come.
And we'll be keeping it non-spoilery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, thank you for doing this, Iz. And, yeah, we're hugely looking forward to next
yeah, looking show. Forward to that one.
Yeah,
good. Yeah.
So there you go.
And go and follow Cardiff International Comic Expo, because she's puts a lot of hard work into that, and we're big fans of that convention. Yeah. As are you, PG. I think you do that as well.
It's one of my favourite cons in the UK every year. We're definitely there this year again, and I can't wait.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, we're looking forward to that. A new venue this year as well, which sounds quite interesting.
Yeah.
It's moved from where it was last year, but there you go. Good.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. Speaking of good ones, I think it's that time of the show where we should recommend some comics. Right. Yeah. That was a bit sexy, wasn't it?
Sexy, creepy, fine line.
Yeah.
Story of my life.
He can't see the line from where he lives. It's fucking miles by.
Yeah. All right. Who wants to go first?
You go first, Vince. Go on.
All right. Okay.
I think I know what you're going to talk about. I'm looking forward to this.
Do you know what I'm going to talk about?
I'm going to guess. Are you going to talk about a certain European book?
No.
Ah, right. Okay.
No. But that'll probably be coming in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, good.
But I must say, and I've only just... This is a book that I've started getting into this week. It's a series that I'd never had the chance to read before. And then someone gifted me on Comixology the book. And it is The Complete Accident Man.
Oh, cool.
Oh, brilliant. Nice.
Pat Mills, Tony Skinner, Howard Chaykin, Martin Emond, is that how you say it, or is it Emond?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Duke Myton and John Earsmus, they're the ones on the cover. And I've just started reading. I mean, it's been mentioned a couple of times on recent shows, Accident Man. And it was a book that I know Dan and Tony knew about, and they read and loved. It was in Toxic, wasn't it?
Yeah, amongst other places, but it was there. Yeah,
and I did notice in the Accident Man book, when you see like the beginnings of stories and stuff, there is like a turned over toxic waste barrel.
And yes, the little sort of title-ish sort of
So I mean, it starts off, there are three golden rules for a hitman: never get angry, never get involved, never get caught. Before it kicks into the first ever story, which is by a story by Pat Mills and Tony Skinner, and art by Martin Emond, or Emond. Which is the story? The first one is the story that I'm on at the moment. I'm just coming to the end of now, which is a good 30 or 40 pages, I think.
That's some raw fucking stuff, isn't it?
Cracking
stuff. Yeah,
properly stuff. For those who don't know what Accident Man is, it's basically the ongoing adventures, I say adventures, of a hitman whose whole sort of ploy is to kill people and make it look like it's accidents. All of his victims look like they're accidents, which is done so brilliantly well in the way it sort of examples it. Like, there's one of his hits, which I just thought was amazing, that there's a guy waiting sort of like by a bus stop. And the accident man, what's his name? Is it Mike something? Is it
Mike Fallon?
Fallon, yeah. He says he's been waiting at like the bus stop for like 3.5 hours for the right car to approach at the right angle at the right moment. And this car comes around the corner, and he's got like a sniper rifle, but instead of like shooting the guy, the sniper rifle is full of broken glass, and he fires it at the car's tires. So the car smashes into the guy and kills him. By accident. I just thought I wanted to clap when I read that. I mean, which makes me sound like an absolute psychopath, but that's thinking on another level.
you've seen the bit they've released from the movie of that, have you?
Is that bit in the movie?
Yeah. That's the whole advert is just that scene.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. Oh, amazing.
Good. Yeah.
Amazing. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, because obviously it was completely
morally. He's completely morally corrupt as well. There's no redeeming features about him at all.
No, yeah. He's an absolute arsehole.
Well, sometimes you see like slivers of kind of morality, but most of the time he just crushes it down.
Yeah.
Have you got the bit where he fights the kung fu master as well? Just makes me laugh.
No, he's not onto that yet.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
There were every time he fights someone hand to hand, he talks about their fighting styles
Yes.
How he can stop it and like how
what's
he
his one again? It's a mix between Western boxing and
He tries a bit of everything. What have we got here?
Newbury, isn't it?
And he's saying all these moves as he's like he's saying Wing Chun as he's snapping someone's knee. or Thai kickboxing as he's just absolutely smashing the shit out of someone.
And he's in those first couple of issues, he's drawn with a sort of real sort of muscular lankiness, isn't he? He's, he's like a sort of a yuppie fighting people.
Yeah.
It's just, I love it. Absolutely brilliant.
He has a PMT as well. I'm not sure he'd be able to get away with that in comics nowadays.
Yeah.
Post-murder tension.
And he has to go and do something, doesn't he?
He goes, some guys, he goes, after a hit, I'm really psyched up. Getting rid of all that tension can be a problem. Some guys have breakdowns. I break people. And he goes to this pub. Oh, Mr. Fallon, hope you're not here too. For 8-0, Croc, here's 50 notes. Take the night off.
Yeah, it's good. The movie looks really good as well. With Scott Atkins. There's a couple, they've released a couple of teasers for it, and I can't wait. There's some cracking people in it as well.
Look, when I saw the car scene, I was like, I'm fucking sold.
You know, I'm thoroughly in for this character and this story going on. So, you know, I must admit, it was completely blank to me. You know, I had a blank slate. I didn't know what I was getting in for. I like stories of hitmen and assassins, but you know,
it's
but
dark, isn't it? As well,
it's,
you know?
It's dark, but there's such an energy, such a tile set, such a wonderfully dark sense of humour that I love.
Yes, yeah, it's so, that typical Pat Mills.
Yeah,
Skinner sort of real sort of sarcastic British, you know, dark humour, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah. And it's just top stuff. I mean, and also the first issues, there's this wonderfully sort of real indie comics kind of feel to them. You know the look and the rhythm of it is so similar to a lot of the stuff I see now. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of it's a real sort of kinetic energy, which I love about it. There was what was it in one of the pubs. There's little sort of amusing things in the artwork as well, certainly with this first story. Like he's being kicked out of a bar, which the house rules are no spitting, no killing, or beating up on Clive. just a great book. I mean, you know, thank you very much, Tony, for
that's right, mate.
This.
No pleasure.
It was,
and I know something. Me and Dan have talked a lot about it, and with the movie coming out, I thought, you've got to read this. And I think it was half price. It's like $9.99 or something on Comixology at the moment. So,
and it is. It's 234 pages, so it's a fantastically. You know, there's plenty of comics to get into. But when I sat down, and before I knew it, I was away. So yeah, fantastic stuff. The Complete Accident Man.
Yeah, Scott Atkins, apparently he loved it as a kid. It was he sort of read it till it fell apart, and it's one of his, he's been wanting to make it for a long time. And he's finally got to the point now where he can start a movie, and him and his mate, I think the director's like a schoolmate of his almost, I think. And they decided to make this, and you can tell. You can tell, there's a couple of scenes that you think, they've got this spot on. It's not a big budget or anything like that, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Hugely looking forward to that. That'd be good. Cool. Okay, who's next?
Daniel?
I don't mind going next, yeah. This is the book I spoke about briefly last week. I picked up on the Comic House app. It's called RIL Persona Volume 1, Identity Negotiation. Excuse me. Give it a brief rundown, but I actually read it through this week. It's kind of like anime manga style kind of comic book. It's kind of that real kind of hyper kinetic action kind of stuff, all black and white. There's a few really nice colour pin-ups of the various characters. There's more of it if you go online on the website. There's a wealth of material. The story starts, and it sort of introduces the reader straight into the middle of like this massive post-apocalyptic war. And you find out there's two sides kind of battling away, and they've got this access to this kind of dark magical energy. It doesn't go too much into it in the first book I've read, but it focuses on the protagonist, who's called Raid. And he's an amnesiac, and when you first come across him, he's doesn't remember anything of what's going on. So he kind of wakes up, and he's wearing this like an Iron Man like bio armor, and he finds himself next to this corpse of this woman that he's got no memory of killing, and he's no idea how he got there or even where he is. And it's interesting as much that you've got this sci-fi world, and with your protagonist being an amnesiac, as he gets introduced to the world around him, what's going on, you as a reader also learn, rather than just being thrown in the middle. And the kind of the narrator of sorts, his partner called Strikes, turns up, and she kind of guides him through what's going on and how it all plays out. It's really nice that the pair of them, they've got kind of very different moral codes, where Raid had just kind of woken up and is a bit unsure about all this killing stuff. Strike, she's well into it, loves the ultra violence. So there's a nice kind of back and forth banter between the two. As you imagine, this is a mature comic. There's a lot of blood and graphic violence in it. So, yeah, that's great. So it is a nice little one. You can read it on the Comic House app, and it's also a long-running webcomic on www.ilpersona.com. So check it out.
Nice.
Cool. Have a look. PJ?
Yeah, I've got a webcomic, Drive by Dave Kellett.
Okay.
It's a sci-fi comic, told against the backdrop of an intergalactic war between the Continuum of Makers and the Second Spanish Empire, who've basically taken over the Earth and then spread out into the galaxy. A Maker spaceship crash lands on Earth in Spain, and they manage to reverse engineer the technology, which takes humanity out into the stars. And then basically the Makers come looking for their stolen technology. They vastly outnumber the human empire. And then there's one little ship basically caught in the middle of it all, which finds this mysterious creature who can fly ships faster than light, navigate them better than anyone else can, but he has no idea who he is or where he comes from, so they're trying to find his home world to recruit his people to fly their ships so that they stand a chance against the Continuum Makers. It's a very sort of epic in scope story, but the characters are ridiculous. They're just really silly, and all the humor comes out of the characters. You've got a character who's Nosh, who's like the science officer on the ship. but he's an alien who was raised in Russia, and he's heart of gold type guy who sees the happy side of everything, even when they're under attack and the ship's about to explode. He's like, well, I've got ice cream, I'm fine. And yeah, it's been going for a while. You can buy physical books as well. I've got the big hardcover, which collects all of Act One, but I think he's released smaller paperback books. But in the opening of the book, he thanks Frank Herbert and Douglas Adams, and I think that's very telling. It's very much a sort of Frank Herbert by way of Douglas Adams story. And you can read the whole lot at www.drivecomic.com. And if you're into sort of clever sci-fi or just spaceships, there's some really cool spaceship designs in it. I highly recommend it.
Just
I
think looking it's a really... at it as well, the artwork has a real sort of almost a Calvin and Hobbes-esque the vibe going through it. It wasn't... Like, when you started talking about it, I was expecting to see like a serious sci-fi sort of epic, but then I can totally see it's quite funny. It's quite humorous,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a very epic in scope, big story, but he mines the characters for humor. And every so often, the strip is interspersed with like a map of certain solar systems that are important to that bit of the story.
Oh, nice.
Texts about the various alien races, their biology, their history and stuff that also will come into play later on in the story, and guest strips from other webcomic artists as well are in there filling in backstory and history. He's had people like Chris Straub, Dylan McConis have done guest strips for him.
Wow.
And yeah, I love it. I think it's a great comic, and I highly recommend checking it out.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That looks
nice.
Great.
Cool.
Okay then, Mr. Esmond.
Mine's a bit more, rather than a particular issue, in fact it's two different issues, but it relates to the same subject. So a few months ago I wrote a sort of unapologetic piece on the Mailer about bemoaning the lack of originality this year in the small press world. I've been reporting on it for a while now and been involved in it for a couple of decades, and it's sort of, I began to feel that certain people were resting on their laurels a little bit. Do you know what I mean? I found it harder to pick out titles this year for our best of show that were small press. And so if you look at my choices, a lot of them came from the mainstream. A few people sort of politely asked me, you know, where I was heading with that. And I made a point in my own head that I wasn't going to reply. And I thought, well, I'm just going to let that sit there. But I think definitely one person or two people who fall outside of that, and I'm also a big fan of both of their work, is Gareth Hopkins and Stuart McCune. And I think if you wanted to look for something that was original and different, I think both of those gentlemen are making comics at the moment. And I sort of thought I'd go through the reasons why suddenly these two good examples that sort of spring to mind. We all know, I mean, Gareth's been on the show twice, three times maybe, I think.
Yeah, twice.
And we're fans of Gareth, and we will fight anyone who says that his work is not a comic, you know, because we really can, we can see where he's going with it, you know. And his work is abstract. His work, I mean, if you look at a page, it can look like an abstract crystal, or a coloured in section of a wall, or you know, just wind blowing somewhere across a field or something like that. And he returns to this new series he's doing, which is called Petrichor, or Petrichor. I'm not sure how you say it, but and I've had a bit of I reviewed it over a month ago, and after he sent it to me, and I asked him if I could publish it because it was a preview, I suppose, and he said he wasn't ready to release it. So I've been sitting on this one for a bit, waiting to talk about it, and he finally gave me the go ahead yesterday when I met him at in East London. And what he's done is we've got this sort of beautiful sort of heavy blacks and lines and abstract work that, you know, if you watch it, it almost moves on the page in front of you, and you can relax your eyes and you can see it sort of morphing around in it. And it's like staring at a cloud almost, you know, you can see meaning and you can see things in it, I think, sometimes. Have you read any of his stuff, PJ?
I don't think I have, actually, no.
Okay. Really interesting stuff. Mm. But what he's done is he's returned to that style of artwork, but above it in panels, he's made it an autobiographical comic. And he's talked about how he's felt about stuff, and what he's doing. So I'm just going to read one of the pages, and I think this is like page 8 or 6 or something like that. And it's I'm in a large meeting room with around 120 of my colleagues. I rock on my chair back and rest my bald spot against the cool glass of the window behind me. Every few minutes, I push my glasses onto the top of my head and I rub my eyes. This is and isn't a memory. I'm writing this to myself during the meeting. We are actually on a beach in Cornwall. And it's like this really sort of moving account of his... It's not like, oh, I did this today, I did this tomorrow. You know, it's like it's actually sort of his emotions and feelings as things happen to him. It's actually a genuinely very moving comic. Mm. And this is the first of three. I'm not sure. I think he's only printed like 10 of them or something. So I managed to get a copy off him yesterday. Oh, here we go. This is chapter 1 of Petrichor. There'll be 5 in total. It will be released in some kind of format in 2018. So really, really nice. He's a very thoughtful man, and I really do enjoy talking to Gareth. And he's not quite as depressed as this comic makes him out to be.
He's one of the nicest and funniest people to hang out with. Yeah.
And one of the most interestingly creative people we know as well. You know, he's a deep thinker about this sort of style of things.
And he hasn't disappeared up his own arse. He loves the Marvel.
He hasn't either.
He loves the DC. He loves
2000 AD. Yeah, he does. That's the thing about him. He's not like, oh, I'm an artist, darling. He's like, you know, he will talk to us about all sorts of things and have a laugh about bum and fart jokes, you know, as we do. Yeah. and is the same, I will say the same about Stuart. Stuart is one of my best friends. I love Stuart to death, and he is a very thoughtful individual and also one of the most generous people I know. You know, he gives all his time to me. We often chat, and he's done issue 4 of The Human Beings hit. I'm not going too much because people have received it this week and may not have read it, but it certainly hit my my mailbox this week. It's as usual, it's come with a sketch and a print and a postcard and a mini comic and, you know, a beautifully designed art comic. But again, like Gareth, like you say there, Vince, Stuart loves Marvel, he loves Dark Horse, he loves DC, he loves not proper comics, he loves comics, you know. Mm. And he's produced this thing that is just sort of starkly strange. And up until issue 4 of The Human Beings, it was an anthology, so it was a series of stories. This is one long story. So he's played about with the format, which he's allowed to do because this is his own comic, and he's done it in a way that is that ends on a note, which I can't spoil, but I think you need to look at, and something else will happen beyond this. But he manages to mix a sort of I don't want to call it fine art because I don't agree with that sort of term really, but some abstract images, some close-ups, some black and white, some one color stuff, and he merges all this into something that you go from quite a sort of psychedelic visually strange page to a sort of close-up of a sort of very sort of starkly honest and visually striking face, for example, and he moves you around this page. I've been backwards and forwards through this comic numerous times, and I find it it's a mystery in a good way, so you're trying to figure out where he's going with it. Do you know what I mean? I wrote a review of it the other day, and I have a notion that there is an autobiographical element to this, only in parts, because I'm not saying that Stuart is a serial killer or anything like that, or a mass murderer, or hangs upside down from the ceiling with a mask on or anything like that. But there's certain moments of it I really do sort of, I find strikingly similar to chats we've had, and in a way, kind of in a way, Stuart's personality. But absolutely brilliant. I absolutely love his stuff, and I think if you're not investing in his Kickstarters, I know that issue 5 is about to go live soon. You're missing out, because they come in an envelope, and every time I see it arrive I think that's like a package of a comic and some lovely art and a print and stuff like that, all sorts of things. If you go to millicentbarnescomics.bigcartel.com for Stuart's stuff, or at Stuart McCune on Twitter, there you go. They're my two.
There you go.
Awesome.
That is a lot of great comics for you to check out. As always, we give the people what they want, don't we?
Yeah.
Do we?
We don't really.
Yeah.
We gave them PJ this week, and I know.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted that.
Mate, the mail we've had, you should see it.
Well, someone pointed out the Troll Tooth Wars is mentioned on the very first episode of the Awesome Comic Podcast.
Oh, brilliant. There you go.
Because Michael Phoenix.
Just close the doors now, walk away.
Yeah. This has been long overdue. We've been meaning to get PJ on the show for quite some time. So thank you very much for joining us this week, PJ.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, dude.
Yeah. You never know. You might hear him again soon when we do interviews at True Believers. You never know.
Yeah.
I'll just force my way in whoever you're interviewing.
Pardon yourself. Why are you staying at the same hotel?
That's hotel anyway. Room chat.
Yeah. Come in for warmth.
It's Larson. No, it's PJ's one.
Oh dear. Were you sickened by that like we were, folks? Oh. Well, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to let us know how bad you feel right now. You can email us awesomecomic. You can email us. Stop trying to put me off.
Why? It's been 133 episodes.
I know. Why change the habit of a lifetime? Email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. likewise tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where who knows what will happen. Not much has happened over the past couple of weeks. But
really,
you know, one day it's just going to kick off big styly.
Yeah.
Much like
when
it does
when Larson tweets you.
Oh god.
Yeah.
let's start a flame war. Hashtag,
I'm hiding in the bath.
Hashtag Larson defense. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you're not involved already, tell everyone else to get involved on the best group on Facebook, Awesome Comics Talk, which we have some great discussions. We try to keep the shameless promo to a minimum. No, we don't.
Yeah.
Planning. I'm. You know, when our anthology comes out, we'll be all over that.
Yeah. And don't forget, if you're active on there, you stand a chance of getting an early digital copy of the anthology.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There you go. See? So it's just a way of saying thank you for everything and for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. That was smooth, wasn't it?
It was nice.
Or if you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. It helps get the word out about the show. And that's what we want to do. The more people that listen to this show, the more people find out about great books like the Troll Tooth Wars. And it just feeds itself. And PJ needs feeding, so he's got to sell some books.
Yeah,
so I do need feeding. I'm very thin.
Yeah. Yeah. He's almost two-dimensional. That's but if you listen to us on the Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod McFadden.
Then
I had that one written down ready today.
nice. Yeah. Then please just spread the word and thank you for listening to us. It's not even a filthy one, but it's really got me.
It's kind of filthy.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
If your head looks like a turd,
then you're right. Really? Speaking of turds, where can people find you online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter. Neverironanything.blogspot.co.uk. We're publishing. Watch out for that and for tinyletter.com/cockneykungfu, because every week there's a story coming out that relates to a back character in Cockney Kung Fu.
Nice. Yeah. Well, where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com, which started updating again on Friday.
Yeah, it's a lovely little video, mate, you put out as well. Nice, I like that.
Oh, cheers. I also put up a an alternative cover for the anthology on the Patreon.
With a bit of flames.
Yeah, yeah, so you can go and take a look at that.
Oh, there nice. You go. He knows what he's doing, that kid. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. Find out more about my comic, theredmousefrommars.com. And PJ, thank you again. Where can people find you?
Yep.
And if they can't make it to True Believers, where can they get the Trolltooth Wars?
Well, you can buy the Trolltooth Wars from www.thetrolltoothwars.bigcartel.com, I think. Yeah, that sounds right. I'm on Twitter at PJ Montgomery, and you can also find me presenting sporadic episodes of the Sidekick Cast when we've bothered to record them on www.panicintheskies.co.uk.
Hey. Nice. Which is a good show. You should listen to that. It's a good show, that.
It's all right.
So there you go, folks. Another one in the bag. And convention season is almost here. So you can hear the hum of excitement, or maybe it's just whatever Tony's doing at this particular time. But either way, thank you for listening.
Motorboating.
And from Dan, Tony, PJ, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read some new comics. And as always, what do we do, lads?
Stay awesome.
Avoid Eric Larson.
No. There you go. See ya.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, Hulk-like anal didn't really come out there, probably, did it? That's a bit of a shame.